Hey, this is Tim Hicks, and I'm chatting with Kim Sear on the Music's Journey podcast.
Horses and hearts, they ain't made to be broken. Should be running wide open against the wind.
I'm your host, Kim Sear, and you just heard a snippet of the latest single by my very special guest today. We're going to play that one in just a little bit. Multi-platinum award-winning entertainer Tim Hicks released Campfire Troubadour earlier this summer, a 7-song collection that brings us right back to playing that music around the campfire, that stripped-back summertime good-feeling music that is a staple for so many of us growing up. We're trying to hold on to that summer just a little bit longer, so let's get behind the music, the lyrics, and the artists here on Music's Journey. Welcome to the show, Tim Hicks.
Thank you for having me on.
So happy to have you back. Good times, great memories. Man, listening to this Campfire Troubadour just brings back so much of that for me. Is it good. The same for you when it comes to growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of where the idea came from. I grew up camping. My wife grew up camping. It's something that we both still love to do with our kids. We went away for 2 weeks in July in the tent with the kids and nice. Really did it up this summer. So we did the same last summer. We do that every year, but of course with COVID I'm able to be away for a little longer than usual because I'm not gigging as much. So that coupled with the idea of, you know, all these acoustic gigs that I did for years and years and years leading up to getting songs on the radio and whatnot. And to be honest, the campfire, we have a fire pit in our backyard that was a bit of our COVID loophole, you know, because we could have 5 people outside distanced around a fire, even in the winter. So, you know, when it came time to do some music, I just thought, like, why not? You know, if we could bottle that up a little bit, because, you know, anytime there's a fire, the guitars come out and there's usually a jam that happens. And I just love that. And I thought if there was ever a time for us to bottle that vibe up and get it out, now is the time. And so that's what we did.
You know, that intimate setting that you were just talking about, having that feeling to be able to bring back to. I used to camp with my parents. They took us for 3 weeks every year up to Manitoulin Island. And Beautiful. We just love it. And just getting around that campfire and just being around family, even though you're doing that at home, it's different, you know, when you're out the outdoors and what it brings to your life. And just it seems to just ground you just in the right way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's so important. You know, we try to instill in our kids that it's important to get away from the screens and get away from the, you know, the rat race, so to speak, and get out there and reconnect with nature. So that's what we love to do.
It's nice when our kids pick it up, too, because I know that I carried on that tradition for my son. Every single year did the same thing for him. And now he's carrying it on in his family. So it'll be nice to see, you know, your kids being able to appreciate all of our parks that we have here in Canada.
Absolutely. And you know, with any luck, we'll instill that in them. I think it's still a little too early to know whether or not they're going to love it or hate it. But I got a feeling that that they will fall into line.
So to speak,
you know what I'm saying?
I hope so. Did you fish with the kids and Amanda?
Yeah, I do. I always get a license every year and go out and do that. I love it. I mean, we do a lot of fishing at my dad's place, too. He's got a place in Huntsville, Ontario, on a little lake and a dock that we can fish off of. And we've caught many a fish off that dock. So
Very cool.
It's something I love to do with my daughter and my son. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice. If you could travel anywhere in the world and camp, do the ultimate experience for the great outdoors, where would you go and why?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, anywhere, any of the Ontario parks are lovely places. I'd love to kind of explore other provinces. Like, for instance, I would love, we've been talking about this for years, I would love to go through Quebec and down into New Brunswick and Nova Scotia and, like, do a really big kind of epic family camping adventure down east and sort of just pitch a tent along the way, you know?
I did that in 2009 because I'd never been out to Nova Scotia or PEI. I'd been out to New Brunswick, but I never had gone any further than that. And I loved it. Loved it. Did all the lighthouses and did all kinds of stuff. So it's really cool.
It's such beautiful country out there. And, you know, I think that it's not that far away from us either. I mean, you're talking a day's drive. So that's something we'd be happy to do at some point.
Oh, it's beautiful out there. Absolutely. And the people are so welcoming. And it's just, we've got some great Canadians, I'm telling you.
We sure do. Yeah, we sure do.
Okay, so tell us about writing the 7 song tracks and choosing these special songs for the CP.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of a process, and it really it started when we hit the second lockdown after Christmas. I was because I had, you know, I'd come home from my world tour that never happened. We were over in Europe. We had just finished playing Berlin and Amsterdam, and we were about to play the O2 Arena in London and then fly to Australia. And of course, that was not to be. Yeah. So my life changed instantly from being on the road to being a stay-at-home dad, and that was a huge learning curve for me. And you know, what's interesting was I thought that I was a good partner before, but as it turns out, I had a ton to learn, you know, about just about, you know, contributing to the household. So I, you know, once I sort of got through that and into a bit of a routine, you know, come second lockdown, I thought I'm ready to get creative again. And that's when I sort of put the call into Jeff Copeland down in Nashville. I said, let's do the acoustic record, man. It's time to do Campfire. So we started writing just over Zoom, you know, with anybody and everybody. And also had a number of songs that were already written that were sort of looking for homes. And that would include Slow. That would include Anna Lee. It would include After All These Beers. These are songs that I had in my back pocket already that I was looking to get cut, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where, you know, sometimes it just takes a while to find a home for these places. And so, you know, for instance, for Slow, like I wrote that song in, I think, 2016 or 2017. And
oh, wow.
I think what happened was it was the first time I'd ever submitted a demo to my team that had a harmonica, me playing harmonica on it,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't at all new for me. I had done that routine for years, you know, covering like Blue Rodeo and Neil Young and Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty. You know, I learned how to play harmonica a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I thought it suited the song. And so when I sent that in, I think they were a little bit taken aback, and we didn't know where to put it. You know, I pitched it on New Tattoo. I pitched it on Shake These Walls. I pitched it on Wreck This. But then when we said, okay, let's do Campfire, it just sort of made sense. You know, a little smoke and a fire and a radio. It's like,
exactly.
That's the time to kick it off. And as soon as we had the demo cut, like the acoustic demo cut, you know, my wife and I were listening to it, and she's like, you got to kick off the record with this song. This song says it all in 3 minutes, you know, and I'm glad that we were able to get that on there. So that was a similar situation with Anna Lee. I wrote that a long time ago, too, and just for a place to find it. And, you know, what's interesting is that sometimes I think we get blinded in the music industry by commerciality, if that mm-hmm. even is a word, you know. And, you know, I think there was a general feeling that maybe a song about my daughter was a little too personal.
Mm-hmm.
But the number of people that have approached me or messaged me or commented about that song is astronomical. And I think that speaks to, you know, Four Chords and the Truth, you know.
It's
that
so
song
true.
Is real, you know. She really is that girl. She's a firecracker. She's the kind of girl that's like, if you tell her you won't be able to start that fire in the rain, she's going to be like, yeah, give me the matches, you know, which she gets from her dad, by the way.
So, I kind of know that part.
Right? You know what I mean? And so, I'm so pleased. Like, and it was one of those things where she was like, Daddy, when are you going to put my song on a real record?
Oh.
You know? And I just called up Ron. I called up the office. I was like, guys, we're cutting Anna Lee. I'll pay for it myself if I have to. I don't care, you know? So and it wound up on there. And then, you know, the other ones, you know, like, for instance, Last Can, that was just me and Jeff doing our silliness thing as usual. Like, yeah, I think we were supposed to write with somebody that night, and they didn't show. Like, they didn't ever log on to Zoom. So it was like, well, do you want to just call it, or do you want to still write? And I said, oh, let's write one of our silly country songs, man. We need one of those. And, you know, I just love it. You know, and it was a little bit, you know, there's a little bit of bravery in that, because, you know, that song, it sort of talks about the vices, and it's pretty explicit, you know, mm-hmm. but it's also done in a way that's tongue-in-cheek, you know, mm-hmm. and I think that people can see that and can sense it. And I've been saying this in all our Troubadour shows, like, I really feel like a little bit of comic relief is needed.
Oh,
in
gosh,
music.
Yes.
And, yeah, you know, and look, because everyone, every time I get together to write with people, and God bless them, because they come from a great place, but everyone wants to write a serious song of the year. They want, like, let's write, you know, whatever it is, Time by Dean Brody, or let's write, you know, I don't know, pick one, Friends in Low Places. Like, everybody wants to write
the hit song
of the year. Yeah. And I'm always looking for that song that's like a little bit of a wild card that's going to put a smile on people's face and give them a chuckle. And I think like a song like Glass Can really does that, you know?
Well, you're known for that because your tongue-in-cheek is just something that we all love, and that's what we're used to coming from you. But like you said, this whole album embodies something different, and I think that's why it's done so well. And I just enjoy every part of it. I love the lead track, Slow, because it's that picture-perfect lyric and sound that you would think of for a campfire song, and that's what you're talking about with the harmonica. That you know, the gang vocals, the tongue-in-cheek writing, the song that just keeps everybody in the right place. You know, enjoying a night, right?
One of the things that I loved about this project was that it was so do-it-yourself. Like, because I couldn't go to a studio, we were in full lockdown, and you know, I'm lucky enough to have a little space where I work in. I cut all my demos, and you know, when it came time to cut those gang vocals, I had to sort of look around and go, well, who we got? So, and Amanda was, you know, Amanda was up in the kitchen. I was like, hey, put on a set of headphones. You're going to come and sing on this, you know. So, and she wound up being on it, which, you know, for us, what a wonderful moment,
exactly.
You know, in our lives and in our marriage and in my career, you know, where we can kind of blend all those things and really get a kick out of it. And the kids got a kick out of it, you know, that mom sings on there. And, you know, it was such a pleasure to put together.
It's all about family and good times. And that's exactly what you captured there. So here is Slow off of Campfire Troubadour, my special guest, four-time Juno nominee and multi-award winning Tim Hicks here on Music's Journey.
Everybody getting high, nobody getting low, taking our sweet time, so let the good times roll. Lawn chairs in a six string, ice melting in a stiff drink, summer sunset putting on a show. Same cars in the driveway, same spot different Friday, nobody got nowhere to go. Everybody getting high, nobody getting low, taking our sweet time. Let us smoke in a fire in a radio all night. Steady as she goes, yeah. Ain't up to much, ain't in no rush. Let the good times roll slow. Like Sunday, get laid back in a big way. Got a cooler full of the usual, and it's staying cold. Everybody getting high, nobody getting low. Southern molasses slow, like cottonwood burns the ashes slow. Time.
go home.
I am Kim Sear, and that was Slow by multi-award winning artist Tim Hicks. I love everything that this whole EP represents, and that's just one of them.
Thank you.
You released the music video for Slow in July. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, the funny part about that is I didn't even know we were filming the music video at the time. It just sort of happened. We got this gig to perform on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that we were going to go to this island in Algonquin Park. And it was part of like a, you know, kind of a semi, I don't know, how would you say it? Like a virtual festival of acts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful. It was the first time we'd all been together. And they tested everybody at the dock before we got on the boat. And of course, we were all negative. So we got on this boat and Corey Kelly was kicking around with his camera and he just started videoing and, you know, just to sort of capture the behind the scenes of this gig. And of course, we had a wonderful time all day and with a little bit of peace of mind that we were all negative and we could kind of, you know, carry on as usual and feel a little bit of normalcy. So, you know, he just followed us around for 24 hours with the camera. And next thing I know, my team, you know, tweets out, hey, music video for Slow premieres today. I didn't even know we were filming one. So it was just one of these things where we just took advantage of the situation. And Corey was more than happy to put that together for us. And he's really proud of it. I'm really proud of it. It really captures the vibe of that day and of that song, you know,
and
Campfire Troubadour. So it couldn't have worked out better. I'm just pleased that we had enough shots to make it work.
Well, it was so cool too, because the moment I saw the signs, you know, that Corey captured, I was like, oh man, my favorite place in the world, Algonquin Park.
Yeah.
So you know instantly where you are. And it was just,
exactly.
It was really cool to see that there.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was actually filmed. I don't know if you ever saw that movie Indian Summer.
Mm-hmm.
From back in the 90s.
Yeah.
It's the quick synopsis is that, you know, it's about a summer camp and all these kids that used to go to the summer camp come back as adults, you know, to meet the caretaker who is in charge of the camp, and he tells them he's closing it, he doesn't want to do it anymore. Anyway, they filmed it at Camp Tamaqua where we did that. So I hadn't seen the movie. My wife was a huge fan of it, so when we got back,
I haven't seen it in a long time.
Oh my god, you gotta watch this, we gotta watch it. And so we watched the movie and it was so bizarre, like, you know, the next day watching this movie going, yeah, that's the dock we just stood on. Yep, that's where we stayed in that cabin right there, you know. It was so cool, you know. And,
A little bit of history,
and what a lovely spot. And they were so kind and so cool and so accommodating, and letting us sort of come and take over the place for 24 hours. It was really great.
Now, you also did a stripped-down version of your smash hit, The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the Campfire edition. So stripped-back interpretation, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I felt like we needed a little bit of continuity because I knew it was going to kind of confuse people. Listen, like, you know, the way that we release music has gone, it's just different now mm-hmm. than it once was, even since I've come on the scene. The consumer music fans are not the same. Music consumption is not the same. And so I thought, like, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty was out at radio at the time. And I said, you know, to my team, much to their dismay, like, I want to do this acoustic record. It's got nothing to do with what we're pushing at radio or, you know, this thing on the side. And, mm-hmm. you know, I could see that they are a little bit uncomfortable. Like, well, what does that mean? Does that mean, you know, we're not going to push the single anymore or we're pulling it? Or what does that mean? Like, what do you explain more, Tim? Like that kind of thing, you know? And I said, listen, like, we can do whatever we want. There's no set way. This is mm-hmm. art. You know, mm-hmm. we can do however we want. So, you know, in order to kind of bring a little bit of continuity there, I said, why don't we do a Campfire version of The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty, and we can put it on there, you know? And everyone thought that was a great idea. At least it kind of tied into what we were doing, what we were pushing at that time. So that's really the idea of where that came from. Plus, I just love the song. And we wrote it in Muskoka at the CCMA SoCan Songwriters Camp with Derek mm-hmm. Bertan and Derek Hoffman. And I just thought, why not put an acoustic version? Like, lots of people do, you know, remixes of their singles or different kinds of production here, there, and everywhere. You know, you can have four different versions of the same song. So I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we could just kind of put that on there? And then it's, like I said, a nice little tie-in to what we're doing. So that's how you wind up with The Bad and the Pretty on there as well.
Well, the song really takes you back to your personal personal experiences playing in the bars and meeting all kinds of different people with different backgrounds, you know, being able to just, everybody's there for one reason, that is to enjoy the music.
Live music. You know, I talk about that in the show, you know, like I met oftentimes when I was playing, because I would play anywhere within a 6-hour radius of Niagara. Mm-hmm. And typically, if you were in a small town, there was only one place that had live music anyway, you know, like, for instance, like I played in Acton, Ontario. It's a really small place. And there, as far as I know, there's only one place that booked live music. So you had a real mishmash of everybody that was from that area coming to see you play, you know, from, you know, professionals to students to kids out on a night out, to families eating dinner, to, you know, like construction workers. And, you know, there was a lot of different folks in those places. And I loved that because you met all sorts of different people and got all sorts of different perspectives and life stories. And some of those people are still my good friends to this day. So that's the tribute, really, is writing the good, the bad, and the pretty for those people and for those venues and in those little towns.
I love the message that you have there. We are going to play The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty by country star Tim Hicks here on Music's Journey on 91.3 FM Blue Water Radio.
Coors Light sign buzzing on the wall. Somebody's name on a bathroom stall. We're full on Friday nights, and we got all kinds of kinds. Beer drinking boys from the softball team. Dolled up girls with fake IDs. One redneck looking to fight. And we're all here all night. Yeah, we're all the same, but we're different. We're all just living, living, just a little ways out of the city. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty. We all need something to sip in, a jar we can throw a little tip in. Tell the band, hey, play nitty gritty. For the good, the bad, and the pretty, yeah. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty. Vests and business suits, fresh hot tops and old farm boots. They're all hanging around, 'cause it's the only bar in town. Drop dead legs in a little black dress, pink lipstick on cigarettes. Only get two nights a week to blow off all the steam. Yeah, we're all the same, but we're different. We're all just living, letting live in, just a little ways out of the city. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty. We all need something to sip in, a jar we can throw a little tip in. Tell the band, hey, play nitty gritty. For the good, the bad, and the pretty. It's our night to go all night. We're all right. Yeah, we're the good, the bad, and the pretty. It's our night to go all night. We're all right. In the pretty, we're all the same, but we're different. We're all just living, letting live in, just a little ways out of the city. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty. We all need something to sip in, a jar we can throw a little tip in. Tell the band, play Paradise City. For the good, the bad, and the pretty. We're all the same, but we're different.
That was The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty by four-time Juno nominee, multi-award-winning entertainer Tim Hicks. This is such a great song. I love the message behind it, as I said earlier. To be able to look back and see the different types of people that are in the audience, you always had the ability to be able to play and read your audience really well because you played solo most of the time that I saw you back then.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing band gigs as well, but not as often because you couldn't book a band, for instance, on a Tuesday night. It was just too difficult. I mean, not to say that there weren't gigs out there, but they were difficult to come by. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I was playing on my own, say, Tuesday nights, Wednesday night, Thursday night, sometimes Thursday night with the band, but sometimes on my own. And Friday, Saturday, you know, either with the guys or without or with some of them or, you know, we you know, when you're a working musician, you take any gig and every gig so that you can keep your mic on. So, yeah, you know, and what's interesting about Troubadour is around that time, I always had two CDs that you could buy off the stage. If it was a band gig, I was pushing my band CD. And if it was an acoustic gig, I was pushing a little acoustic CD.
Very smart.
So I always had it in the back of my mind to do that kind of thing again, you know, because it was something I was very comfortable with. You know, and in terms of reading the audience, that just comes from practice. Mm-hmm. You know, when you do those kinds of gigs for as long as I did them, anybody would get good at reading the audience. You know, it's like if you want to be a great ping pong player, you just play ping pong every day, and one day you look around and you're at the Olympics. You know, it's the same thing for me in music. Like I just did it all the time, every day, and woke up one day and went, huh, I guess this isn't the phase I'm going through. I guess this is my career now, you know?
Well, because you got so much diversity too. Like you've got so many influences in your music.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have all of that in your music today, and that's what's really solidified you, you know, in the music industry and why you've done so well. And it's just great to see when you are playing those low-key times, like when you're back into some of the smaller venues, it's nice to see you play that way again too.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of fun over this past month playing sort of acoustic shows to limited audiences. And, you know, I would say that at the top of the show. I'd say, you know, if you've seen us before, this is going to be a very different show, you mm-hmm. know. And it gave me an opportunity to kind of like tell the stories behind the songs and to relate some road stories and tell my story really to everybody of how I got to where I got to. Because I get asked that a lot. You know, Tim, my son is 15 and he wants to be a musician. You know, tell me your story. And you know, what should he be doing or she should be doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it really gave me an opportunity to kind of like, you know, peel back the production and just get to the meat and potatoes of the songs behind the stories and the songs themselves, you know? So it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, you know, and I bet they just love it. I know that I did. You know, anytime I got to see you like that, it was just a nice version, because I see you all the time when I'm, you know, shooting all the festivals and stuff, and that you always put on an amazing show and the audience absolutely loves it. But it's nice when you get to play and it's like you're playing right to the individual right in front of you.
Yes, it really is. Mm-hmm. You know, and I live for that connection. You know, I love to, because I, you know, often I'll close my eyes when I sing because I'm concentrating. But when I do open them and I catch someone's eye and I can see the joy on their face, that's really why I do it.
It's the same thing with radio too, because you're writing songs that are going to connect. And that's what works well here. And we have to talk about the very special song about your daughter. So Annalisa, tell us again about this very special song.
Yeah,
I love this one.
That came out of a pretty tough time. So, you know, I mean, the quick story is that Amanda and I started to have a family just as my career took off.
Mm-hmm.
She was literally, you know, 7 months pregnant or 8 months pregnant when I showcased for my record label. And my son was 5 weeks old when we drove to Nashville for the first time. So, you know, really what that meant was that I was away a lot. That was very difficult on everybody. Me being away from the family and not being able to be a part of it, and on Amanda having to pick up, you know, double work, and the kids not having their dad around. And we would FaceTime, and we do FaceTime, and it's a really great tool to have. But I've said it before, it's like, you know, it will never replace a hug.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular writing trip, I was in Nashville, and Anna was having a really tough time. And so I felt helpless, you know, as a dad. I felt like my hands were tied and did the only thing I knew how to do, which was, I guess I'll write her a song and at least it'll help me feel a little bit better. So I guess it was kind of from a selfish place maybe, but I thought maybe she'd get a kick out of it too. And so I did. So I wrote half the song the night before and then went in the next day to my right with Driver Williams, who's a fantastic songwriter, plays guitar in Eric Church's band. And we finished it up. And it was perfect because I knew he had just had a daughter and that he could identify. And and he certainly did. So we finished up the song and then that was it. You know, for a long time, I demoed it out. I demoed it a number of times because I loved it so much. And anytime I played it for anybody, like friends or family, they're like, you got to put this out. And unfortunately, like I said, we sort of get caught up in the, you know, will it sell category of music. You know, my team was a little bit hesitant because they felt that such a personal song might not sell. You know, and you know, to me, I was like, guys, but it's true, you know, like, if it's true, then it doesn't matter if it sells or not, because at least you feel, you know, you close your eyes on your pillow every night and feel good about yourself when you go to sleep. So I was just really pleased that we were able to get it on there. And you know, like we were talking before, like my daughter basically said, she knew we were picking songs to go on Troubadour. And she said, "Daddy, when are you going to put my song on a real record?" You know, and that was it. I was like, you know, like any dad, you know, and I would say that in the show, I'll say, you know, any fathers of daughters out there, you know, because I know that they understand, you know, "Daddy, I want a pony," you know, and it's like, "Well, what color, honey?"
Well, they do. And the whole thing is that as soon as I heard this song, I was like, you remember I told you a long time ago, I wanted to see you write that personal. I just wanted to hear you write something that was so stripped back and personal from you. And that was like, what, 20 years ago?
Probably. There it is.
It's a long time ago.
It took me 20 years. I'm a little late.
But when I heard this one, I could see all the moms out there making those faces like, "Oh my God, this is like such a special song," you know, and that's the kind of response you're getting. And it's just such a cool story behind it, that rock vibe. How old is Annalie now?
She is 8. She'll be 9 in March. But going on about 18 or something.
Well, you know? this is a song that she is going to be able to cherish forever, you know, a legacy from her dad.
And you know, that's what her mom says. She says, "You know, you're making it very difficult for some young man someday."
So that is
100% my job. That is my God-given right as a father.
You're calling out all the other dads out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so here is Annalie off of Campfire Troubadour by multi-award-winning country artist and the first recipient of the Nelson Compass Award, Tim Hicks, here on Music's Journey on 91.3 FM Blue Water Radio.
There's a picture in my wallet where my money used to be, of trouble in a sundress on a swing in Tennessee. From the first time that I saw you, I knew you'd own my heart. I'd have you for a while until you had to chase them stars. Annalie, so pretty like your mama, got a heartbeat like no other, and a soul no one can tame. Annalie, there's a world taking, and I know you'll find what's waiting, and light some fires in the rain. I just hope that when you think of home, you think of me. Sometimes I get a month, the come-and-gones don't get easier as time marches on. But I know where to find you, down any road you take, from the trail of broken pieces, from all the hearts you'll break. And leave, so pretty like your mama, got a heartbeat no other, and a soul no one can tame. Annalie, there's a world out there for taking, and I know you'll find what's waiting, and light some fires in the rain. I just hope that when you think of home, you think of me. Picture in my wallet, another 1,000 on my phone, and anytime I need you, to bring you right back home. Annalie, so pretty like your mama, got a heartbeat like no other, and a soul no one can tame. Annalie, there's a world out there for taking, and I know you'll find what's waiting.
That was Anna Lee off A Campfire Troubadour, a very special song from a father to his beautiful daughter by country artist Tim Hicks here on Music's Journey. You are pulling on everybody's heartstrings right now with that song. Oh. And what did Anna Lee think of the tribute to her when she heard it the first time?
Whenever, because they got to come to quite a few of the Troubadour shows, and if she was there, I'd make a big deal out of it.
Aww.
She would just be beaming, you know, like, because she's kind of like her dad in the way, like, her brother doesn't so much like the spotlight, but I think she does a little bit, you know. Mm. I mean, she's still a little girl, so there's a little bit of shyness there. I remember looking out at one show, and I think some press was there. I'm assuming because the fella had a camera, like an actual camera. Mm-hmm. And he looked over to her as we were playing it and pointed, and she gave him a big smile and nodded yes, like, yes, that's me he's singing about, you know. And we had a nice moment. So it's, you know, I think that she really she must really like it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is she a daddy's girl?
Oh yeah, totally.
Nice.
But she's everyone's girl too. Like, she loves her mama. Like, she was attached to her mother's hip literally for the first 5 years of her life. So, because I was on the road essentially. But yeah, I mean, she's for sure, she knows, you know, I have like guilty road dad vibe about me. So it's like, she knows if mom says no, she's going to try and do the head around and hit
smart
me up, you know?
Girl.
Yeah.
She's got you guys figured out already.
Oh yeah, she for sure does.
If you could take a special trip with your daughter anywhere in the world, just the two of you, where would that be and why?
Yeah, I think I got to see some pretty amazing places prior to having a record deal when I was playing on the road in tribute bands and whatnot. And there's a place in the south of France called Villefranche that
is absolutely,
you know it? Yeah,
yes.
It's unbelievable. It's one of the most picture perfect places I've ever seen and spent time. And I was lucky enough to be there many, many times over the course of my time doing that those kinds of gigs. And I took Amanda there, and she agreed. It was just absolutely incredible. So one day I would like to go back and bring everybody and really show them, you know, this wonderful place on earth. It's got like a cross between, like, definitely a European vibe, but there's a little bit of tropicalness there as well, just being close to Monte Carlo. And you know, being in the Mediterranean, that water can get pretty turquoise, you know.
It's gorgeous.
It's just a beautiful, beautiful place on earth. I think I'd love to take her there.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Okay, so as I mentioned, you are the first recipient and now 3-time consecutive winner of the Nelson Compass Award. What's that like for you to be recognized for something like that?
Yeah, you know, that one is special. Because, you know, for listeners out there that don't know, so what that is it's really about the hard numbers of your career. So they add up all your streams, all your sales, all your ticket sales, basically all the legit trackable interactions that you can have with your fans. And you know, the artist or band or whoever that has the most wins the award. And so that really is special because there's no voting involved, there's no politics involved, it's just pure numbers, you know. And what an overwhelming thing to have won that, you know, a number of times at this point. And it blew me away. Like, the first year it happened, I didn't understand what it was until afterwards when someone said, "I don't think you understand what this is about." And they laid it out. It was like, "Oh my Lord, this is incredible." Like, there's no, you know, like, you can arguably say, okay, well, you know, male artist of the year, well, so-and-so goes out and lobbies votes for himself, or female artist of the year, that, you know, you lobby votes. For this award, you can't lobby any votes. It's
nothing.
It's just about numbers. Yeah. And that's what I love about it.
And social media too, because, you know, like, that's a big deal now. Like, when it comes to Spotify, Amazon, and all the live, you know, digital streaming platforms where fans have that opportunity, you know, to be able to, you know, pull that decision away from where the awards were given before. And, you know, you're seeing that all the time, that Apple's giving Artist of the Month, and same thing for Spotify and Amazon. So social media is playing a big part in that. And that's a big part of this award too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what's super interesting, it's like a little bit of a, you know, score one for the underdog, because I don't have a deal with a major label, you know, like Warner Music or Universal or Sony. You know, Open Road is an independent label, so that's a big deal, you know,
exactly.
for a a guy on an independent label to win that award, it was pretty humbling and pretty overwhelming, you know. And I'm very proud to represent Ontario at the national level and hopefully continue to keep this train going.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Please. Well, we all know you can. We definitely know that one. Okay, so what has been your favorite song on this EP?
Oh, that changes all the time. But I would say right now it's Horses and Hearts.
That's mine.
And I don't know what it is about that song. It came together very organically. I was writing with Eric Dillon and Jimmy Thau from Sons and Daughters, or formerly of Sons and Daughters. And Eric had the idea. And he said, listen, I was just talking to my buddy, and I don't know if this is true or not, but he was telling me that if you're going to buy a horse, you can't just buy one horse. You have to buy two horses, because a horse will die of loneliness. And we're all like looking at each other on the Zoom screen, and I said, that sounds like a great country song. How do we write that? Like, you know? And that week in particular, I was like really like listening to a ton of Eagles, which, you know, I do it every week. I love the Eagles. They're one of my favorite bands. I was really hardcore into it that week, and I had this progression that was like really Eaglesy. And when he said Horses and Hearts, I thought, well, I've got this chord progression that kind of fits with that. And it just sort of wrote itself, you know. And it's the one I sent it in. I sent it in to my manager, and he goes, what, you go on country now?
What do you mean?
Exactly. What do you mean? But it was just so traditional from me. You know what I mean? Like, usually I'm like, you know, pushing limits here and there and everywhere. But in this case, we really went down that traditional sort of road. And I demoed it out. Like, I have a full demo of it, you know, of it sounded just like Blue Rodeo, really, who are my favorite Canadian band of all time, you know. It just made sense to do a stripped down version of it on Troubadour. And we've been playing it in the show too. I don't know for how much longer we'll play it, but it's like, you know, one of two songs in the set that we play for ourselves, you know, and I love playing it. So, and I'm proud of it. It's the one, you know, I've got a couple of real hardcore songwriter sort of traditionalists in my band, and it's the one that they say, wow, good lyric on that one, man. And so coming from them, I you know, I'm proud of that.
There you go.
It got on their radar, so.
It was on mine the moment Anna Lee for sure. But, you know, when it comes to my favorite song on the EP is this one. And
I played
this one over and over again. I never get tired of it because it does have that traditional classic feel to it. Again, like the harmonica, the banjos in this one. You know, you can really feel the lyrics. I love the vibe. I love the sound. It's just such a great song.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be one of the ones, like, because I can, for instance, like Slow, Horses and Hearts, even Anna Lee, I have full production demos of these songs, you know. And I told the band, I said, you know, once Troubadour's sort of, not that it, I don't think it'll ever be over for me, because I think it's going to be kind of a reoccurring theme that we do, you know, every year or every other year, where we cut a couple of acoustic songs and sort of add to that collection. But, you know, I said, when there's time and we're in rehearsal, I'm going to teach the band the full versions.
Nice.
So that we have the option then of, like, you know, we could open the show with Horses and Hearts, you know, for like as a kind of a vibe, you know, depending on where we are and what we're doing. Or we can hold on to it for the broken down, you know, Troubadour section of the show, which is what we've been doing lately. So, you know, there's options there. So I'm excited about that.
I think you're going to see, you know, people in Australia, because we have huge listeners out there, and obviously, you know, in the U.S. and in Europe. But I know that this one is going to be one that they absolutely love.
That's awesome. I hope so. I love it too.
So here is Horses and Hearts off Campfire Troubadour by Country Royalty. Tim Hicks here on Music's Journey.
Horses and hearts, they ain't made to be broken. Should be running wide open against the wind. Can't find some men. Horses and hearts, they ain't made. Save me. I guess that's just the way.
way God made me. Yeah, horses and hearts, they ain't made to be broken. They should be running wide open against the wind. Can't fancy me. Horses and hearts, they ain't built to be lonesome in the dark. Whoa, horses and hearts.
Yeah, come on.
Horses and hearts, they ain't made to be broken. They should be running wide open against the wind. Can't fancy men. Horses and hearts, they ain't built to be lonesome.
That was Horses and Hearts off of Campfire Troubadour by country artist Tim Hicks. We are so excited about this song. So I love the words that are in this song too, is they ain't made to be broken, should be running wild and open against the wind, and can't fence them in, horses and hearts. Love this song by Canadian country star Tim Hicks.
You know, what's interesting is that the original lyrics were, you know, they ain't made to be broken, should be running wide open with the wind.
Mm.
And, you know, as when I sang the work tape and I sang it wrong, because oftentimes that'll happen to me because I can't read fast enough as I'm like playing the chords and recording it at the same time. And I said to the guy, I got done the pass, and I said, oh, I sang the wrong words. I sang running against the wind in the chorus instead of with the wind. And everyone went, no,
perfect.
That's way better. You know, kind of like a nod to, you know, to Bob Seger and to the Eagles and to that whole thing. You know, they said that's way better, actually. So we actually changed, we call that a happy accident. So we changed the words to suit my mistake on the work tape.
Oh, you know what? It is perfect.
Thank you.
For many of us that love horses as much as we do, it does really pull on our heartstrings. But like you're talking about with the different influences, the Eagles and Bob Seger, you're pulling on my heartstrings on that too. You connect with the audience, you know, with these real songs. And it's just something that's really special with this body of work for you.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, that was important for me on Troubadour, you know, was to kind of show, not only show a different side of me, but I was thinking of this as like using it as a bit of a springboard to you know, because once you show everyone like, oh, Tim Hicks plays harmonica, oh, he writes songs, you know, that aren't about beer, you know, or the party, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
That was something that was really important to me, to show everyone that, you know, I'm not just a one trick pony here. I've been playing music a long, long time, and I want to show a few different sides of me, and I want to have all kinds of different songs to sing in the set. You know, not just bangers all the time, although it is, you know, we're lucky in the sense that we've got a lot of songs that we can kind of draw from that are up tempo and that work great in a concert when everyone wants to party. But also I love having the option of like breaking it down and singing something from my heart that really means something, you know, to me and to other people as well. So I'm really pleased.
Well, I think a lot of the fans too that known you and seen you play before, you've had all the huge success that you've had. That's the one thing that we loved about you, as I said before, is that connection that you had with the individual in the audience. And that's that side that, you know, that's what kept everybody coming back. And
right.
To see this body of work is just, to me, is awesome. Really, really
well, thank
cool.
You.
Now, you've played some of the biggest stages in the world and sold out crowds, and you're coming off of these huge shows, the radio tours, the studio release after studio release. Now, when the world comes to a complete still like it did, how did it affect you the most? And what was the biggest lesson, the silver lining for you in this pandemic?
Yeah, well, I mean, if I'm honest, like I didn't even realize what was happening, but it took me months to get out of the funk. And I think, you know, in retrospect, I talked a little bit about this last summer, but that initial shock of, oh my God, what is going on here? Really just it, I was grieving. Mm-hmm. I was grieving the loss of my tour. I was grieving what I perceived to be the loss of my career, because, you know, we didn't know how the world was going to look or what was going to happen. I was grieving the loss of all the momentum that we had going into that. I had a number one in Australia. I was about to go down there and play. You know, it was just, there was a lot of really dark days. And then, you know, that coupled with the fact that I had kids, I had responsibilities, I had to get up and get out of bed and learn how to manage a grocery list, learn how to cook meals beyond my limited dad style of cooking, you know, macaroni and cheese and hamburgers on the barbecue, you know what I mean? So, you know, that became not only a challenge, but it became a blessing, because it allowed me time to reconnect with my family, which I didn't even realize I needed. You know, everything happened so quickly when it finally did happen. And we're talking like 18 years of sliding it out in bars to get, you know, arguably nowhere, you know what I mean? Until this stuff happened. And then it was just like full steam ahead for so long that the forced break ended up doing more for me positively from a human perspective than I could have ever anticipated. You know, and I think in the end, I'm a better partner. I'm a better dad. I'm a better person. I'm a more balanced person. I took up running, for instance. Like,
I hated running.
I hated fitness. I you know, I worked out at a gym because I worked in the entertainment business. And as I was lifting weights, I would say, in my next life, I'm going to get a job at GM and eat chips. You know, it's like as a joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's no slag on anyone that works at GM. That's hard work. And you know, some of them eat chips and some of them don't. But I would say that to my trainer as like defiantly, you know. But the break allowed me to focus a little bit more on my health, on my mental health, on, like I said, reestablishing relationships with my kids and with my wife. And so, like, it you know, that's, to make a long story over, that whole thing was not only the biggest challenge I've faced in a long, long time, but also the greatest silver lining ever, you know, in the same breath. And it just took me a year to really realize that. Working in the entertainment business, I have seen all sorts of economic times come and go, you know, and what I saw especially when I was playing in bars, is when people are down, they want to be entertained. When people are up, they want to be entertained. And I always felt like I had job security in this business, because at the end of the day, I could still take my guitar and go down to some chicken wing bar and stand in the corner and play Friends in Low Places and everyone would clap. And they hopefully would pay me $100 or whatever it is that I could buy groceries with or keep my lights on. But as soon as you can't put two people in a room,
all that
goes away. And yes. I never saw that coming in a million years. And if my wife was on the line, she'd say, we saw it coming, as if she's a public health nurse. You know, and she worked through SARS in the early 2000s. And, you know, and has obviously been working on the front line in the war room of this since February 2020. So, you know, she'd say, in our business, we saw this coming. But in my business, we didn't see it coming at all. At least I didn't, you know. So that was a tough thing to wrap my head around, like all of a sudden not having a job anymore, you know. And I mean, people would say, well, you know, you can still songwrite and you can still put out music. Yes, but I do all of those things as a conduit to get to the gig. Because that's where I come alive, you know, performing in front of people, seeing that connection, looking at the smiles on people's faces. It sounds silly to some people, but that's what I live for as a performer. And I don't know, you know, some people notice, they're like, you've been quiet on socials. It's like, because performing to my iPhone or to my computer screen got old really fast for me. You know, and I was focused on other things as well, but I just couldn't wait and can't wait really to get back out to play for people, you know, and in front of a real audience, you know what I mean?
Makes a difference. So
it's a different thing. And, you know, I would joke about it on my online performances, like, I can feel you clapping through the screen. You know, that was really just like, you know, me trying not to, you know, not to go crazy in my head, you know what I mean? Like, just like, what am I doing right now? See, here I am in my living room singing Can't Buy to my iPhone, and this is the only conduit I have to my friends and my family and my fans. You know, that was really hard. But as the world continues to heal, you know, hopefully we're able to keep the light at the end of the tunnel getting a little bit closer every day. And at some point, we're going to be back to normal. I don't know when that is, but, you know, there will come a day where we have concerts without masks and, you know, without those things. So hopefully sometime soon.
Yeah, we'll get there. 100% we'll get there. You know, if history has a way of repeating itself, we just have to learn the lessons along the way, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's all been there, you know, in generations after generation, but we just need to be smart about it. That's all. So thank God for Amanda, you know, God bless her soul and all that she's doing.
Yeah, and her entire team, they have worked so hard, and there's such a high instance of burnout in the medical community, and nurses and doctors and staff and PSWs. You know, they really need a hug collectively right now. Yeah. And I don't know what to do about that, but something will present itself.
Well, let's hope so, because I know we went through it here. I think we talked about that last time, because I ended up losing my mom in March. And, you know, we had the PSWs coming through all the time. And it's just, you know, I wasn't putting her in a nursing home anywhere. We did it here. And it was just such a difficult, you know, time for everybody, but to watch what everybody was going through. So we had a firsthand look at what those guys go through and, you know, what they deal with. So we appreciate each and every one of them, that's for sure.
Right on. I love that.
So we want to talk about Don't Look Back in Anger. So tell us about that one.
Yeah. So, okay. So for those of you that don't know, that's a cover song from a little known band called Oasis.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of how it went down. So when we were picking songs, my team came to me and said, we'd really love to hear a cover on this. Like, you know, and please consider doing a cover. And, you know, I was sort of, like, for lack of a better term, like a little bit allergic to covers for so long, because, you know, I literally played 3 or 4 sets of covers every night for almost 20 years. So when my career broke, I relished in the fact that I got to play my own songs. And so it was rare that we would put a cover in the set, or that we would, you know, put a spotlight on a cover, because just because of where I come from and what I did for so long. That being said, I'm far enough removed from that now that I look back on those times and those songs, especially with nostalgia. And what's super interesting about this choice was that, you know, once I agreed to it, then everybody had an opinion. Hey, maybe you should do this one. Hey, check out this one you should do. You should do this. You should do that. And I'm looking for, and it's coming from everywhere, from my friends, from my family, from my team, you know. My producer, like, hey, what about this one? And we had almost settled on one. And it just wasn't resonating with me. And at the exact same time this is going on, I found myself doing a deep dive into 90s nostalgia. And I don't know why that is, but it just felt good to do. And I wasn't a fan of Oasis in the 90s. I was way too into the Eagles and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Waylon Jennings and Blue Rodeo and, like, these sort of rootsy country rock bands. The Band, you know. My friends all thought I was from another planet, because when they were listening to Nirvana, you know, I was listening to Simon and Garfunkel. And
same
no
here.
One understood me. Yeah, and so...
Same here.
You know, but as an adult... You know, I started listening to Oasis and I got really into it. And I keep there's a documentary about them called Supersonic that I keep on my laptop, and I've watched it on many, many flights, you know, prior to COVID. And I became a fan of the band, even though I wasn't a fan of the 90s when they first came out. So I came down to my studio one day and I turned on my microphone and I sang Don't Look Back in Anger from top to bottom, which was really kind of strange because I never performed that one when I played in bars. We always did Wonderwall.
Oh, right.
Because that's the one everybody asked for.
Mm-hmm.
But I always loved that song, you know, Don't Look Back in Anger. And so I had recorded myself singing it, and I sent it to my producer, Jeff Copeland. And he said, this is it. This is the tune. And I said, I don't even know what came over me. Like, I just sat down and sang it. He goes, perfect. So we sent it to my management and everybody agreed, yes. And then it's like sort of left on it. We've got this lady at our record label, her name's Rain, she's wonderful, but now it became Rain's problem because she had to get permission for me to cut it, you know. And
oh,
literally
yeah.
Like, we got permission from Noel Gallagher to cut the song. Like, it's unbelievable that we were able to put this on the records, you know? And in my justification was this. It was like, if I was at a campfire and somebody busted out that song, by the first chorus, I'd be singing, mm-hmm. especially if I had a couple of drinks in, you know what I mean? And that's exactly what I was looking for on this, you know, to put it last or somewhere near the end, you know, where it's like, all right, all my drunken friends, let's sing Oasis now around the fire. Like, that's kind of the vibe of it. And I'm just super pleased we were able to get it on there. And we've been doing it in the show. We've been closing the night with it.
It's a good song.
A lot of fun to listen to all those people sing along with us, right? And because that's the kind of song it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we were able to get it on there. And I was able to settle on that one because I think it could have gone either way, you know, with a different song. Like, you know, you might have been scratching your head going, I wonder why you picked that one. But it made sense to do.
I'm so glad you're watching that documentary because this one is so good. So here is Don't Look Back in Anger by platinum-selling artist Tim Hicks here on Music's Journey on 91.3 FM Blue Water Radio.
Slip inside the eye of your mind. Don't you know you might find a better place to play. You said that you'd never be, but all the things that you've seen slowly fade away. So I'll start a revolution from my bed, 'cause you said the brains I had went to my head. Step outside, summertime's in bloom. Stand up beside the fireplace, take that look from off your face. You ain't ever gonna burn my heart out. And so where you go, where nobody knows if it's night or day. Please don't put your life in the hands of a rock and roll band and throw it all away. I'm gonna start a revolution from my bed, 'cause you said the brains I had went to my head. Step outside, 'cause summertime's in bloom. Stand up beside the fireplace, take that look from off your face. 'Cause you ain't ever gonna burn my heart out. And so say
not today.
That was Don't Look Back in Anger by country star Tim Hicks. I love the rock vibe. I'm so glad you chose this song. It is so good.
Somebody sent me a message about that. It said, hey, Don't Look Back in Anger. Is that meant to sound like a Beatles song? And I thought, obviously this person missed the memo that it's Oasis.
Just a little bit.
Like, yes, it was when Oasis wrote it, it was meant to sound like a Beatles song. Like, that's exactly what it is. You know, now we're three generations, you know, the third generation past that, right? But it's a good one. And I love the Beatles. I played in a Beatles tribute band for a short time.
I remember. And, remember that.
Yeah,
God, that's a long time ago. Yeah.
Yep. I got to tour the world dressed up like a Beatle. And listen, as a songwriter, what better education than dissecting those songs? You know?
Which one did you play in the band?
Oh, I'll never tell.
Oh, come on.
Which one do you think? Let's have a look. You guess, and I'll tell you if you're right or you're wrong.
Oh, good Lord. George?
Nope.
Don't know. Come on.
You only got,
Paul?
You've got a 1 in 3 chance.
Paul?
Nope.
Really? John Lennon?
John, yeah, I was John. Yeah.
Really?
I was, yeah.
Wow.
Which is funny because I'm more of a Paul fan. Like, I love Paul. I love Paul's all this stuff that he did with Wings. Yeah, I love all that. Bluebird and, you know, silly love songs. And I love it all. You know, I think it's great.
Hmm. You know? Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, I was John.
Okay. So tell us about choosing the song for Campfire Troubadour. And this was Last Can. Talk about that.
Yeah, so Last Can, again, that just came out of a Zoom songwriting session that I did with Jeff Copeland. We've written tons of ridiculous songs like this, and most of them don't see the light of day. But there was just something about this one that was just so much fun that it was undeniable. And it was a last-minute audible to get it on there, because we had chosen one or two other songs, but we needed something with tempo, you know, mm-hmm. to kind of break it up. And I just love the vibe of this one. It kind of reminds me of like an East Coast kitchen party or something.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that's how that one wound up on there. And it's just about a guy, you know, who's more concerned that his soon-to-be ex-wife is leaving with all of his vices than he is about her actually leaving. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And that's the joke. And, you know, don't leave, don't leave, don't leave me. Don't leave me high and dry. You know what I mean? Like, he's not saying to her, don't leave. He's saying, don't
just
leave me
my
high
stuff.
And dry.
Yeah.
You know, don't take my beer, my weed, and my whiskey, you know? So I just thought that made for a fun little story. And, that's another one we've been doing a lot in the show. And it seems to be going over quite a bit, you know, very well. And
you can hear people again, you know, around the campfire having their conversations right after that one, right?
Exactly. You know, and we laugh every time because I give the guys, you know, they started mimicking some of the gang vocals, like you know, I know I've been a huge pain in the ass, and you know, someone goes, hell yeah, yeah, like, and they relish in that, you know, in that moment, like they get to tell the boss off, right?
Oh, I got a good question for you since we announced this one. So I got a really good question now that you said that.
All right, tell me.
I've got who is the biggest diva on your team?
Oh, well,
in your band, who's the hardest to deal with?
They would say the guys would say it's me for sure.
That's, really?
You know, so prior to us making a change, we had a guy in our band, and I love him to death. He's one of my best friends to this day, and if he was on, he would laugh at this. So we can talk about him nicely behind his back. But Jeff Torn, who played guitar, was definitely the biggest diva in our band for a long, long time. because he's the kind of guy, like, you know, I love to rib everybody, like, in a fun way, but sometimes he would take it the wrong way, and he would storm off and be upset, you know, for an afternoon until he's the kind of guy that you go and tickle him a little bit and he's all right. But you know, it's like, you know, I try my best to be as easygoing as possible. And honestly, most of my guys are totally, in fact, all of them, none of them are divas. They're hardworking, honest guys that, you know, they show up on time and they're ready to work and they are so talented. So, you know, especially if Amanda was on the line here, she'd say, oh my God, it's Tim for sure. But I try my best not to be. I try to be as easygoing as I can.
Well, I didn't see that one coming. So there you go. Okay, so let's talk about being able to play this last summer, being in the studio far too much, doing all that stuff, being able to deliver what you've wanted to do for all these summer jams. Tell us about being back on the road with the team and the shows that you've been playing.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of up in the airs, you know, because when you go for as long as we have gone without performing, I thought, oh, am I going to be able to do it? Is my voice going to be okay? Are people going to come? You know, am I going to be able to connect in the same way? Are people interested still? There was a lot of questions. I thought maybe tickets would go on sale and people would still be hesitant because they don't want to be in a crowd. You know what I mean? So we didn't really know how the summer was going to go. I can say now in retrospect, it was fantastic.
We are going to play Last Can, that tongue-in-cheek song that we've all grown to know and love by Tim Hicks. Can't get any better than this one to kick off your day. So here we go with Last Can here on Music's Journey.
Here we go. Don't you take my last can of beer. Just grab your things and get on out of here. You can take my guitar, take my truck, take what you want, my dear. Just please don't take my last can of beer. Don't leave, don't leave, don't leave me. Don't leave me high and dry. If you're gonna make me cry. Don't go, don't go, don't go make me shed a tear. Please don't take my last can of beer.
Come on.
My last bag of grass.
Don't do it.
I know I've been a huge pain in the ass.
Hell yeah, you have.
You can take my records, take my clothes, my cookie jar of cash. Just please don't take my last bag of grass. No, don't leave, don't leave, don't leave me.
No.
Don't leave me high and dry. If you do, you make a grown man cry.
Don't go, don't go, don't go stealing all my stuff.
My last bag of grass.
Oh, come on, girl. Anything but that. It's government braces. Come on, yeah. Play it.
Don't you take my last shot of whiskey. Might as well just wind on up and hit me. You can take my heart, take my pride, take one last chance to kiss me. Just please don't take my last shot of whiskey.
No, don't leave, don't leave, don't leave me. Don't leave me high and dry. If you gonna make me cry. Don't go, don't go, don't go make my eyes all misty. Please don't take my last shot of whiskey.
That was Last Can off a Campfire Troubadour. Tim Hicks here on Music's Journey. That was just so much fun to listen to this one. I have a very special request.
Sure.
And I'm hoping that you can give a shout out to your top fans here in Ontario.
Okay.
And this name's going to sound real familiar. George and Elena.
Oh, yeah. George and Elena. They're wonderful people. They are such fans of Canadian country that,
huge.
You know, those are the people. And I would say there's probably two dozen people across Canada that are really, I call them ambassadors of Canadian country music, because they really shout it from the rooftops. And
mm-hmm.
we live for those kinds of people. You know, if I'm not talking at a turn for all my artist friends, but those are the types of fans that you love to have, because they never stop talking about it, about the genre, about the artists, about the songs.
100%.
And I just love them to death. They're just such lovely people.
Well, I just wanted to make sure we gave a real big shout out to these guys, because they absolutely adore you.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Congratulations once again. We have to talk about the weekend that just passed. You got Single of the Year this weekend. So talk about that, because this is a very special song, No Truck Song, that you released. Everybody loves this one. Again, one of those anthem, raise it up festival song. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So, I can't even believe how much traction we've gotten out of No Truck Song. And, you know, I'm extremely honored that it was awarded Single of the Year at the CMA Ontario this year. And, of course, it became my second number one song at Canadian country radio, which just knocked me right over because, you know, when you write a song like What a Song Should Do, the hair on the back of your neck stands up. And the day we wrote it, I knew that if there ever was a song it could possibly be a number one for me, that What a Song Should Do was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So fast forward to writing No Truck Song. We wrote it at night, you know, at one of our wild card nights, which I talk about all the time. So like in Nashville, writing is usually a day job, but musicians, we work better at night. So Jeff and I will get together with another writer or another couple of writers after hours, have a couple of beers, order some pizza, and just see what falls out.
Mm-hmm.
And No Truck Song came out on one of those nights. And the story goes like this. So we were with Bruce Wallace, who'd written lots of songs with, and Bruce asked me, what do you want to write? I said, I'd like to get something real country if we could. And I was coming off of New Tattoo, which was pretty much like my interpretation of a Bryan Adams record.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get back to the country thing a little bit. And Bruce says, okay, cool, something country, that's cool. And then Jeff pipes up from the kitchen. He's like mixing margaritas or something. And he's like, as long as it's not about trucks, because we'll never get it cut. Because someone told us, stop writing about trucks. You'll never get that on the radio, you know. And of course, like, I'm just that kind of guy. Like, when somebody tells me they can't do something, I'm
you
like,
go ahead,
yeah,
and do it.
Watch this, you know.
Just like your daughter. Fail,
like,
yep.
I feel better about, like, my daughter. Yeah. So, as a joke, I just sang, "All right, I got this. This ain't no truck song," and we all fell out laughing. And then someone said, "Like, well, wait a minute. This isn't a bad idea." And by the time we were writing the bridge section, we were basically just Googling all our favorite truck songs. You know, something about a truck, yeah. You know, mud on the tires, I drive a truck, pickup man, you know, dirt road anthem. We wrote it. We were dying. Like, how does this song write itself? And at the end of it, we cut the work tape, which is basically just like, you know, everyone puts their iPhones on the coffee table and you sing your song. And then none of us looked at each other and said, just wrote a number one, boys. Like, it was a joke. We looked at each other. It's like, all right, you ready to hit the bar? At least we got something, you know. And next thing I know, we're cutting this thing. And then my team's like, we're going to put it out as a single. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. And then it went number one. So, you know, that to me said two things. Number one, I can't ever pick singles because I don't have an ear
for
that.
I'm
too connected to what I'm doing, so I rely on other people to do that. Number two, you just never know what's going to resonate with people. You know, you just don't. And I think that with Truck Song, it had a lot to do with the time. You know,
I think
it went
so.
Number one,
yeah.
Yeah, it went number one in the middle of the first wave, so people were so down on the luck and feeling so dark that, you know, this silly song comes on for 3 minutes and they're able to shut out the world. And I think that that was a huge contributing factor in the success of that song. And then it went gold within a year. Like, that's unprecedented in this day and age, you know, to go gold so quickly. You know, it was just one of those ones where I still shake my head, put it on the set list, like, all right, well, people like it, so here we go.
Well, the fans love it, because you got to think about it. When everybody's cooped up, the one thing that people can remember that brings back memories, just like, you know, Campfire Troubadour, is getting in your car and going for a drive. It's and blasting the music is just
totally,
it's that calm place. If I can't do it in my house, let me just at least get some fresh air. You can wave to people, you can sit in a parking lot, you know,
sure,
in a drive-in parking lot, talk to somebody out of your car. It's just, that's the next best thing, right?
Yeah.
For people to going for a drive. So you can hear why that one would work out really well right now. So,
yeah. And like in hindsight, you go, well, of course it worked. But at the time, mm-hmm. I couldn't even see. I was like,
story.
This is just too silly. You know, this is too silly. But people, I mean, if any, like the thing that the line that people kept telling me, it's like, if anyone could sing this song and make it a success, it's you, Tim. You know, because
so
everyone
true.
Knew it's like, well, this is the guy that kind of, he doesn't take himself too seriously anyway, so you know, And if it didn't work, we would have gone, well, hey, who cares? You know?
I got my 89 Silverado, I shined up, headed for the back 40, looking for mud. These Firestone AT2s won't get stuck.
Don't be fooled by what I'm saying, cause that ain't what's up.
This ain't no truck song, this ain't no fist tailing down a dirt road song. Cause you ain't with me sitting pretty riding shotgun. No girl, you're long gone, this ain't no truck song.
Until he'll be like Deluxe.
This ain't no truck song, this ain't no fish tailing down a dirt road song. Cause you ain't with me sitting pretty riding shotgun. No girl, you're long gone, this ain't no truck song. Ain't no truck song. You ain't ever coming back, no, no. Hey, see ya. I'll keep playing, baby, one more time.
I love the story
yeah, behind this one.
That's so true. Cool. It's all true.
Okay, so where can everybody, and of course everybody knows, but just tell them anyway for, you know, the people that we've got across the border. So tell everybody where they can get the latest music and live show information, tour information.
Well, you can always get the best information about me on my website, which is timhicksmusic.com, or you can find me on all the socials. Look for the verified check mark. So I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We've even got a TikTok page up, although I haven't been active lately, but we'll get back into that as the summer winds down. But yeah, I mean, I love to hear from fans. I love to connect. I love to interact. Those are the best places to find me. But if you're looking for tour information, definitely go to my website. Like, where things are winding down now, but you know, there is a tour in the works for when the world opens up. We just don't know when that's going to be. So we're just kind of waiting for the smoke to clear so that we can lock in some venues and get back out to doing what we do best, which is connecting with people in a live music format.
Oh, we can't wait. So just reminding fans, you can download Campfire Troubadour and you can do that on all your streaming platforms. Don't forget to share it on all your socials and streaming platforms for new music audiences across the world to hear Tim's new music. So you can open up a whole new audience for this incredible music. So any requests that you want out of this particular album, make sure you're contacting your local country radio station if there's one that you're not hearing right now, and ask for it to be added into rotation. So don't forget, you can do that. Burning questions portion, you got a few minutes to do that?
Sure.
Okay. Favorite Campfire song growing up?
Heart of Gold, Neil Young.
Nice. Favorite moment on stage so far?
Oh, that's a hard one. Okay. The very first time we played Boots and Hearts. No, sorry. It was actually the second time we played Boots and Hearts. It was the very first time I played Boots and Hearts as a signed act. We were standing backstage, and to hear 10,000 people chanting your name for the first time was really emotional. And my steel guitar player had just joined us, and he's from Australia. He lives in Hamilton and has for a long, long time, but he's originally from Adelaide, Australia. And he looked at me, and he goes, "I feel as though I've been let in on some secret I wasn't aware of." You know, because he had no idea what he was getting into. But we're like, yeah, now I have a record deal and songs out. You know, it's all these 10,000 kids chanting my name. And that was the very first time they ever introduced me as Open Road recording artist Tim Hicks.
That was very cool.
Oh, it just, you couldn't wipe that smile off my face for days. You know,
I was there, and I have the pictures, last pictures, because I was the veteran in the pit that started for Boots and Hearts. And so, yeah, that's one show I didn't miss.
Well, that was the Thursday night kickoff party. Do you remember what happened after that? You probably
I do.
The PA system stopped working, right?
Exactly.
Half the amps didn't work.
Yeah.
So the quick story is, and I'll make this quick because I've been chatting your ear off, but I was waiting backstage, the intro rolls, and the band is supposed to kick in at a certain time, and no one kicked in. And I thought to myself, oh my God, everyone is fired. I'm firing everybody.
There's that diva.
And I poke my head around the corner, and my guitar player, Andrew, he goes, "Breaker blew on the stage." He says, "Nothing's working." I was like, oh, good, good. You know, and this is seconds after we just had this super emotional moment. Like, people are chanting, and we're like, "Yeah, we're gonna go out and slay them now. This is gonna be great." And of course, half the gear doesn't work. Stage staff are diving everywhere. Finally, somebody flipped the breaker on. But I remember I ran out to the microphone and I went, "You guys are so hot. The breaker blew on stage," and everyone went, "Ah!" You know, it was like kind of one of those things, and then you just sort of shake it off and away you go. But that to me was probably one of my favorite moments of my life.
Cool.
Honestly,
yeah, I know that it always happens, you know, every once in a while it's going to happen, right? And I'm sure you're used to that, you know, when things don't work then the way they're supposed to. What would be your dream write and performance if you had an opportunity to work with any of your idols, anybody past or present?
Who would it be and why? Too many to count, but you know, if you're talking country, I still haven't met Eric Church. I would love to write a song with him. I think that he would have he has a lot to say, and I think he just does it in such a cool way. I'd love to get a little bit of that. But I would write with anybody.
Okay, listen, you take care. Give Amanda a big hug for us, and congratulations once again.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Okay, you take care.
Talk to you next
time.
Okay.
All right. Bye bye. A great big thank you for Tim Hicks for coming out to the show. I look forward to having him back. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Tim, and you can check out all of my interviews at musicsjourney.com and the interesting articles with the latest music and videos all about the artists that I interview here at nowandthenmagazine.com. Well, that's it for me, your host, Kim Sear. Thank you so much for tuning into Music's Journey. We appreciate each and every one of you. So have yourselves a wonderful evening, and we'll see you soon.